كده كده راح شويه.
شوية شوية.
quick question before we start. When people ask you to, let's say some words in Algerian or Wahranian dialect, usually their reaction, they will laugh. They will not laugh in the perspective of bullying, but they're just having fun and they're happy because you're doing some efforts. The other side, I can't see any people from the US that they love when you don't pronounce the word very good. They just don't care. And they don't give you any kind of challenges like spell this or tell me this, and they wait you have to pronounce it.
Yeah, that's true.
What do you think? Why there is this difference? Then Algerian is very happy when Kelly say Berkoukis or Gourgar, and the other side Kelly doesn't care about Youssef when he say any of complex words.
Interesting. Like, so are you asking me, why do Americans or English speakers not notice when other people whose native language isn't English are like, why don't they like get excited or feel ask like, hey, can you spell
this? Just think about it. I don't know if you have a really question, but we're thinking about it because I don't have an answer
It's a good question. It was like maybe a month and a half ago. I was there was like this conference here in Oran, and I was with somebody from the embassy at one point, and we were like, she's Algerian, but she's like kind of like helped me with a lot of things and whatever, we're friends. And she we went somewhere together, and this person started speaking to me, and they were speaking in English, and I was just responding to them. And after, she was like, Kelly, why did you not compliment them on speaking English to you? And I was like, oh my gosh. I was like, whoa, I realized in that moment, oh, people speak English to me because they want me to comment on it.
Okay.
And, or like, yeah. And I had never thought about this before. And I think some of it has to do with like, as English speakers, we can be a little bit self-centered, maybe, and not think about other people.
Okay.
And so, you know, I think I didn't think about, because I think English is like, can be, we cannot realize.
It's a must. It's a must comparing with the Wahranian dialect. Mm.
We think like, oh, we have some sort of maybe like, built-in entitlement that we carry with us that like I didn't realize I had, where I like don't even notice sometimes when people speak English to me because I'm like, oh, it's just like normal, you know, it's normal for me. But then after she said that, now I always will compliment people. So that's so I think some of it is like some selfishness that's in us being native English speakers, but also I mean, and not maybe selfish is like too, I don't know, maybe people would disagree with me, but I feel like it's just we have some kind of entitlement maybe that we carry around. But then also I would never be like, can you spell this word? Can you say this word? Because that feels rude. Yeah. It feels rude. Okay. Like, because, you know, So, I mean, but it's different when people do that to me. I think that's totally different. And I'm like, yeah, it's fine. Yeah, but I think it's like,
there's a book. There's a book of Edward Said. The book is Orientalism, and he said the book is a critical examination of Western representation of the East, particularly of the Middle East and North Africa. And Edward Said argued that Orientalism is a cultural and intellectual framework through which the West has historically viewed and studied the East. And he contends that Orientalists represent often perpetuate stereotypes, exoticize the East, and reinforce a sense of Western superiority. So when Kelly was living, let's say, in Washington and came to Wahran, you already have an cultural accumulations of what is Algeria and what is Wahran. Do you think Edward Said is right? Because you had an idea, and when you live here, you find another idea, or it's the same? Because Said said something very, very I don't know. I didn't experience that. But he said that someone from US, let's say, they will never understand the Algerian, because they have already a framework of analyzing stereotypes. They have already an cultural accumulations that they can't let them see things in the way that we are seeing it. What do you think about that?
What do you mean a framework? Like, we have a framework of understanding stereotypes.
I mean the pattern or a way of thinking, yeah. Or I don't know. It's vice versa. It's vice versa. Same for me. I will see the people in the US in a specific way, but it's not the right way, because maybe the media teach me what is the US, the Algerian media, I'm saying. And when I will, even if I will live in the US, I will still analyze the people in the US in my way, not the real way. You know what I mean?
Well, yeah, I can see what you're saying. I think that, so truthfully, I didn't know a lot about Algeria before I came. There's not a lot of public understanding of Algeria in the U.S. and
not Algeria, but let's say the East, let's say the Middle East and North Africa in general.
Sure. Yeah. I think that, I guess I had some ideas about what it would be like and maybe how I would be treated, particularly like as a woman, you know, and also though I'm a person who, before I do anything, I like get a lot of research, like I do a lot of research as much as I can before I do anything that I do. And so I tried to talk to everybody who had been here, and frankly it wasn't very many people that I could find, like Westerners, all the people I talked to were women, actually, like former. So I'm an English language fellow, so I'm like a teacher of teachers here. And I talked to some former ones who had come before the pandemic and had to leave because of the pandemic. And they were all women, and they were much older than me. And then I talked to a Fulbright scholar who was also much older than me, but she was the only one I talked to who had actually lived in Wahran. And so, but, you know, I had some ideas about perhaps how I would be treated, I guess, personally. But I also got the sense that people, that people didn't really know what Algerian culture was like. And the few people that I talked to were like, it's very different than anything anyone else is telling you about, like Morocco or other places. Like, this is a different culture. And so I came in understanding that I didn't know, and like that what people were telling me might not be true. Okay. Even my friend from Tunisia, I talked to her, and she'd only been to Algiers one time. And so I kind of took everything everyone said with a grain of salt. Like, I knew that
because, you know, the experience of a tourist is not like your experience. Sure. You're living here.
Exactly.
So when you go to Istanbul.
Exactly. Yeah. And you come to Algiers for like, what, 1 day, 2 days, like you can't really know, even if you're from the region. Right. So anyway, but I definitely had some preconceived notions, especially growing up in the West, especially with Western media and things that you learn about the Middle East. But North Africa, you know, I mean, I didn't know a lot about North Africa, though. And I did know, like, maybe it's a little different than the Middle East. But anyway, I had some friends. So I think this was like, my understanding was informed from the media, things I'd read, but also from my friends who, like, I had some pretty good friends in the US from Saudi Arabia in particular. And so I had very good, like a very positive view of the Middle East, in my opinion. Okay. Like, I feel like I'd experienced a lot of hospitality from people in the US, and I'd seen, like, you know, how people practice, even like a little bit how people practice Islam, and like from those cultures, like I was like, it's a very hospitable culture. Like, so I was coming in excited, but I think what really surprised me was, well, first of all, I think I came in you know, like I've definitely been having a honeymoon period, right? Where I'm okay, like, oh yeah. My, everything's amazing. Like I'm thriving. I love everything. Yeah. And I know that I have particular privileges, like for sure, coming in as an American, and I'm maybe shielded from some of the cultural elements that like, you know, like, I don't know, but I've like personally loved it. But I think something that really surprised me is how safe that I do feel here, actually. Okay. And like how people are really funny because they'll be like, oh my gosh, like don't go like to this place, like during this time, like, you know, and there are some places, of course, I'm careful. I'm a very careful person. But before I came here, I lived in Washington, D.C. And it's a very big city. And
Washington is safe. And for example, Oran is safer than New York. Is safer than New York.
Yeah, definitely. But
comparing to Washington, Washington is good, I think.
Well, I mean, it's not. I think that I do feel safer here, though, in general. Like, I feel like I'm less harassed. Okay. I, like, feel more protected in some ways. I don't know. Like, I just feel like in some ways I do feel safer. And I think there's a more communal commitment to taking care of each other. I felt very taken care of by like neighbors and friends and that I've met and who only know me a little bit, you know. And so but like now that it's very different, you're right, like visiting somewhere versus living somewhere. And I wonder how much of like you know, like in that book that you were talking about, which I'm really interested in, I kind of want to read it now that you told me about it, but you know, I wonder how many Westerners have really like immersed themselves in the culture. And I'm not saying that like I've only been here since October, but I do think that, you know, it does start to undo stereotypes or like perspectives that you have. But I don't know if I agree. Okay, because you were saying like we can't really know, like can't have really an accurate view. I don't know if I totally agree with you because I hope it's okay. But I feel like because I think we all have a cultural background that we're coming at anything from. And so I don't know that it's like inaccurate, like how we view, but it's just like the reality, like that we have different perspectives. And I think that there are some things that I've been surprised by myself that I'm like, wow, I really prefer this about Algerian culture. But now, like, that I'm here longer, I'm like, I love these things. And some things are very difficult for me the longer that I'm here. Like, and so, you know, I think I can see the cultural, like, my cultural identity much clearer. And, like, because of this, like, contrast where I'm like, wow, that's, like, really not what I'm used to or what I prefer. Yeah. And I know it's because of my culture. And so that's really interesting too. But I don't know if it's like, I think like the more we live and like spend time with people from another culture, the more that it's like, maybe we recognize our cultural identity, but then also it does change a little bit. Like, you know, so.
Sometimes, you know, when you're not from Algeria and you're surrounded by people, let's say from people from Wuhan, they will treat you in a special way. So sometimes whatever 10-20 years you will never live the real experience. So because
that's
of that
true.
Cultural background, they're all trying to be cute with you, nice with you, because you know they're trying to represent Algeria, and it's very critical to show their bedside. So that's what's of the things that Saeed is saying in his book. Anyway, let's say the other version, the vice versa. You speak with many Algerians, and they have that the American dream that they want to live in the U.S. What do you think? What are the things that you are almost sure that they will lose and they will not find when they will go to the U.S.?
Yeah,
and they are. Let's say, you know, the U.S. is very big. New York is different than L.A., than Washington.
Yep.
In general, let's speak in general, specifically in the Washington. What are the things that are good here and they will not find there? From an Algerian perspective.
Good here in Algeria. Yeah. Well, I think that what I really find that's good here is that it seems like Algerians aren't gonna go hungry here. Like, I'm not saying that that's not true for anyone, but like, people have their basic needs met. That's something I've definitely noticed. Yep. And living in DC, and if you visit, like, if you visit Washington or New York or any major city, you will see extreme homelessness.
Right.
And I know I've talked to some Algerians here who were very surprised when they visited the U.S.
Yep.
So like, it seems like here, although maybe people don't have everything that they want, they do have their basic needs met oftentimes. And so that is something that is not a guarantee in the U.S. And that includes like healthcare also. Like, our healthcare is extremely expensive in the U.S. and housing is expensive, and even food like is pretty expensive. And so
the extreme capitalism will hit you if you lose your focus one day. For 1 month, you will not work.
Yeah,
and,
Yeah, no, it's true. Yeah, I mean, and yeah, the U.S. is very, very capitalistic. It's true. It is. I would also say, like, in Algeria, something that, and maybe this is different if I lived in Algiers, but it seems like, you know, people's work is not their identity. It's not like the first thing that you ask somebody at a party. Whereas in the U.S., it is one of the first things that you ask somebody. It's like a core part of our identity. And we take very little vacation in the United States. Like, we are really tied to our work. And that's definitely true in DC, but also in most places. It's not common to, you know, like here, I've really noticed that people are so like very, very committed to their family, but also to their friends, and like prioritize friendships and really prioritize relationships. And I would say that that's not, and not that people don't, people do, we love our family, we love our friends in the U.S., but it oftentimes, it's, we're not prioritizing them in the same way that people are here. We're not spending like many hours every week, or I mean, it depends. Okay. Like, it's a little bit hard to explain, because I think Americans would be like, no, like, I do prioritize, it's Americans, we do prioritize our families in particular, but it's not the same. We don't spend as much time with people.
If we take the whole picture, it will be we will not judge the American people in the wrong way when they prioritize work.
Yeah.
Because when you live there, you will understand that. A friend from the U.S. asked me, when you're not in Algeria, how many times you call your mom? I told him that I'm a bad boy. I'm not a family guy. And I call her 2 to 3 times a week. And he said, wow.
Yeah.
And I said, usually it's every day. And he said, oh my God. And when he explained to me, I really understand that maybe he loved his mom more than me, and he called her once for each 3 to 4 months. You know what I mean? So 3 to 3 months doesn't mean you don't love your mom.
Yep.
Just because it's different culture, different context. Yeah. And he told me,
it's true.
For
sure. Like, America is a more individualistic culture. You know, we do value privacy. We value, and I think Algerians do value privacy as well, but like, we really, like, you know, value privacy and our individual rights and freedoms. Like, it is just, it's just true, right? Like, for instance, like, I have some friends here, like, okay, so like, smoking is a much bigger thing here. Like, in the US, people don't really smoke that much.
Yep.
And so like, some of my friends, I'm like, oh, like, you know, I've like, they've talked about not wanting to smoke anymore or whatever, but I would never, ever, ever, even if I think somebody, like, I'm like, oh, I want them to stop smoking, I would never impose my own opinion on their decisions. I would never, I mean, maybe eventually, right? Maybe eventually I'd be like, have you ever thought about, or wonder if, you know, do you want me to help you, whatever, but like, really, not really, because it's such a personal decision. And so like, and I've talked to some friends about this, and they're like, no, like, here, if your friends don't want you to do something, they will like throw all your cigarettes away or like whatever, you know. And I think like in the US, like, that's not what we do, you know, like, we really, really value our own privacy and other people's privacy and independence. And so
even if the body language, we are close to a person when we talk to them, comparing to the space that they give you in the US.
So it's just, it is different in that way. So, I mean, and I've told people, like, I'm not lonely here. Like, I don't really feel lonely. Whereas in the US, I felt lonely all the time. And I have like very good friends. And I think I'm a person who, I really prioritize my friendships a lot more than most people. Like, it's just true. Like, I make a point to go visit my friends, like, every year I'll go fly to see them and stuff. And But like still I'm very, I would feel very lonely, and it's very common for Americans to be lonely. And I think especially if you are an immigrant, it's going to be really lonely. And I think for Algerians, there are a few places in the US where there are big groups of Algerians, right? Like it's New York, I think. Like I don't, maybe also. LA. Okay, Boston. Yeah, I have heard about that. Yeah. So I think that unless you live in those places, you're not going to find a community of like-minded people. And, or like, I don't know. I mean, like maybe you will, right? But it's going to be harder. And just keep in mind that like cities, it's extremely expensive. They are so expensive. So yeah. Those are just a few things. Yeah.
Another question, because you are a teacher here. You teach teachers to teach English. I do. And one of the biggest challenges in education is let's suppose when a government wants to develop the educational program, there will be a close limit comparing to a development of a private school program, because the huge amount of teachers that you have, usually they have an average level and they cannot teach that perfect program that you are preparing with adaptive learning and something like that. So what do you think about, you know, this one of the biggest challenges that you cannot scale a good solution just because you don't have the, you know, that amount of teachers that can handle this solution, comparing to just a small entity? You can hire good teachers to deliver that good program. So how can we develop and scale the education in a government, even if we have average teachers?
So are you talking about like the curriculum?
Yeah,
like
the curriculum.
Standardized curriculum.
Yeah, the scalability of a good curriculum. Because let's say I want, there is a revolution of AI. I want in each elementary school the teachers to teach an introduction to AI. But I can't do that because I know my teachers. I know their level. Usually in each country, they have an average level. So they cannot provide and teach this kind of new content. Mm-hmm. So I cannot update my program. So, but in the same time, I want to develop the program of my government and do the scalability of that. So, this is one of the biggest challenges of education. What do you think about that?
Definitely. No, I think that's a problem across, you know, probably for most countries, even the US. And I have most experience teaching in the US. And so, like what we would do in the US is every year there would be new initiatives and new curriculum development and different things that we had to do. And so every single year at the beginning of the year and throughout the year, we would have professional development at our individual school. And so like the leaders of the local education sector would come and give training to the teachers. And it would be a requirement. It was part of our job and we would get paid for it. And then we would be like evaluated on those things throughout the year. So I think like that is one way. It's not like a perfect way, but I do think it's a pretty, but you have to have the people to the trainers to do those events. Mm-hmm. But I do think it is a way to introduce and help to like make sure that your teachers are staying up to date on like the newest policies or practices. But then at some schools that I've worked at, they also will have like coaches that will come in and coach the teachers. And the coaches are like weren't connected to our scores or like our evaluation. They were a little bit, but not as much as some of the other administrators, but they would come and they would coach us every single week. And oftentimes they would choose like newer teachers or teachers who were new to the that district and would train them and like observe them and things like that. So that's more like day-to-day improvement, but of course this requires like money and resources and people. So but I think that those are some of the ways that it can be more effective. But it's easier said than done for sure.
Also, there is the goal-oriented teaching method where you don't define the curriculum and how they should teach, but you just define the goals. and you let the teachers create their way to reach those goals. Mm-hmm. And at the end, you see the result of each teacher, and the ones who got the best result, you try to understand the behaviors of their student. And you can you try to find the same behavior in another state and implement the same program to them. What do you think about AI and education? Do you think, are you losing your jobs, guys?
I think AI is like a neutral concept. Like, it can be good, it can be bad. It's like, you know, it can I think too, it's interesting to me, like, because there's so much of our lives that we use already that's AI. Like, Siri is AI. You know, like the algorithm for like Netflix is AI. Like, there's a lot of things that we're already doing that like include AI. So it's interesting to me that people are like alarmist right now about this. Cause I'm like, wait, like, you use AI every day. Like, Google is AI, you know? I think people are scared of, it seems like people seem more afraid of ChatGPT or like things like that for some reason. And then that's extended into some other, I was just leading a little training last week about this. But I think that, I don't know. I think that when there's anything new that's like revolutionary or seems to be like, you know, yeah, that it's very new and impacting people in a significant way, that there's a lot of fear about it. And so I suspect, and I could be wrong, I'm like by no means an expert, but I think that some of the fear will die down eventually. But I think with teaching in particular, we've always had issues with plagiarism, with like, you know, I mean, with students, like I've taught children and I've also taught university students, and like I always would have to lead plagiarism trainings for my university students, especially because they were international students, and especially it doesn't matter, but yeah, I would lead all these trainings, plagiarism trainings, and it's always been an issue like for so long. And so maybe there are new issues and maybe it will be more difficult to detect some of these things, but I think that there's always I think that good teachers will teach their students to critically think, and that there are ways to make sure that your students are performing in the classroom they can't be using AI. They can't be using those tools when you're like evaluating them. So like, even if they're gonna, I think there are also ways, I personally, when I'm like, okay, everybody's afraid of something, I'm like, let me just bring it into my classroom and we'll work on it together. And we'll see how can we use this in a way that like benefits my students. Like, let's like look up, you know, I'm like, I want to just be like, okay, let's search and be like, find me an essay that does, you know, is about this topic, whatever. And have my students like evaluate the essay based on a rubric and be like, is this like really matching the rubric? Like, in what ways is it inadequate? In what ways is it like not critical? You know, and I think that it can be a tool to show students how to critically think. I just think like it's a mistake if we're like, no, this is all bad and terrible, and we can't, like, if people like think we shouldn't use them at all, it's a mistake because it's already here. So like, find a way to use it in a way that's like gonna help your students, you know.
It's an assistant. It's just like people who were riding horses, they were afraid when car came.
It's
the same for AI. Just use it as an assistant and get to the turbo and boost your career. Great. Last question, food. tell me in general about your I would like to know what because I'm living in Iran, you're living in Iran. It's not right to compare, but I'm really interested to know what's your lifestyle here in Iran.
Okay, walk down to the souk, and I buy a bunch of vegetables and I buy fruit. I love cooking with all the local fruits and vegetables, and I love my local fromagerie, and I buy yogurt and cheese from them and bread. I love the bread culture here. Like, I have been a baker for a long time.
Oh,
yeah.
It's
and
a family
in the
thing,
US,
or you just
no, not
okay.
really. Well, you know, food is a family thing. Like, in my family,
okay.
food is extremely important, which
nice.
Isn't true for all families in the US. Yeah, but my
yeah,
family,
yeah.
my mom's from the southern part of the US, and my dad, like, loves to cook also. So, the South in the US has, like, a really big food culture. And so food has always been super important. But I got really into bread baking maybe, like, in 2013. And so it's been a while.
Wow.
So, and in the US, bread isn't as much of a staple food. And so here I'm, like, thriving. I even, in the US, we have a type of bread. It's, like, naturally leavened bread. So you don't use yeast. And it's, like, with a sourdough starter. I brought my sourdough starter here, but I have not baked. I baked bread one time since I've been here, but
okay.
I just don't need to because there's bread everywhere. So yeah, I'm just, like, eating a lot of that. And then I also eat a lot of Syrian food here in Mahoran.
Shawarma.
Yeah. Shawarma. And also, like, meze. I just, like, get a bunch of meze, like I get, like, hummus and like mohammara and salad and stuff, and I just, like, eat it for days. French fries, you know. But no, I've had couscous once. I do love berkoukis, but I've only had it once.
That what I heard in your podcast that you tried berkoukis once and
and it's so good. I need to learn how to make it. I need to learn. But I love karantika, like, with harissa, you know. It's so good. So
nice.
Yeah, and crepone. I love crepone. So.
Ah, okay, that's good.
Yeah.
Did you experience the food that in the other wilayas of Algeria?
Not very much. Yeah, not very much. So I definitely need to do that for sure.
Okay,
it's a goal
great.
For the next year. Yeah.
Tell me about your podcast and the project.
Oh, okay. Well, so the whole idea came from me wanting to learn Darja, okay, and I, you know, it's been a little bit of a struggle, yeah, for me, because I have more of a background in French, so I can get around.
Nice.
But trying to learn Darja, you know, all my friends are like, "Oh, you'll just learn it by hanging out with us." Gotta say, not how language learning works. So I'm learning some things, but it's not really, like, I need some more, like, consistency. So I was like, wonder if my friend and I start this podcast. He teaches me Darja. And I'm shamed publicly, right? That will help me be more motivated. And it's working, Shwia, just a little bit. But we started the podcast also as an effort to kind of merge, like, learning Darja with also, like, through the cultural elements of Algeria and specifically Wahoran. And then also, like, having some cultural exchange, you know, with, like, how my experience is compared to the US and things like that. So yeah, it's been really, really fun.
And what's the name of the podcast?
Yeah. Latte Ma'a Lashab.
Latte Ma'a Lashab. Okay, nice.
Yeah, yeah.
Good.
Yeah, we would often meet for tea or coffee, you know, and so we thought, might as well make, you know, it's like how we became friends. So it makes sense.
How many episodes do you do right now?
My gosh, that's a good question. We have some in the docket, you know, like ready to be released.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And the latest one we did was Karantika.
Mm-hmm.
But I think out now we have 1, 2, 3, 4 episodes out right now. But we have some more on the way. So yeah, please listen. We're on Spotify.
Right.
Pretty easy to find. So right. And on Instagram.
And the program that you are teaching here in Oran is a solo program. Is there a way for some people who can join or apply, or it's
unfortunately not really. So I work with the École Normale Supérieure. It's a teacher's college. And so I teach there. And then I also do stuff with the American Corner. Here in Oran. So that's the way that maybe people could get more involved.
In the American Corner.
Yeah, the American Corner. But yeah, my classes, it's more of like a close, it's like students who apply and, you know, so I teach them, but, yeah, but the American Corner, I'm there sometimes and I'm going to have some workshops and different things like that. So yeah, you could see me there for sure.
Great. Great. شكراً بزاف كيري، يعطيك الصحة على وقتك.
شكراً.
أيوة، نتلاقوا إن شاء الله عند عيبوت ناكلو كارنتيكا.